Welcome to Habs Unfiltered. This independent podcast is featured on the Hockey Writers and iHeartRadio, bringing you honest and unfiltered entertainment and discussion on the Montreal Canadiens and hockey news. Your hosts, Matt Smith, Treg Wilson, and Blaine Putney, are proud to be one of your trusted sources. If you are talking about it, so are we. Welcome back to Habs Unfiltered, episode 397. I'm your host, Blaine Putney, and I'm joined by special guest Lyle Richardson, a.k.a. Spectres Hockey. Welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me back, Blaine. It's been a while since we last chatted, all things Habs and other NHL stuff.
That's true. It's been a busy year for everybody.
Yeah, for you guys especially. Yeah, understandable.
Well, I mean, you're busy, you know, like getting your hand modeling career retirement pension fund all put together. And
yeah, but it was worth it to be finally have full use of both wrists again. So yeah, my wrist shot has improved. People will be happy to hear that. I can snap that off at 30 kilometers an hour now. So there we are. Not quite, not even close.
How did you pick up 15 kilometers on me?
Never mind.
Yeah, and unfortunately, I just missed you there when we went up to PEI for my son's hockey tournament. We were in Summerside.
Yes, it was kind of unfortunate. I wish that, you know, I mean, I understand that you've got a busy schedule too. It was just like, oh damn, if I could have had like a few days notice ahead of time, I could have freed up time on my schedule to be able to pop up there. Because as soon as you shot me that, I was like, oh damn it. Now I was actually sitting there going, can I rearrange? Can I move that? Shit, no, I can't. So it's like, it was great. You guys got a chance to pop up here to this hockey mad island, and
we had a blast.
Yeah, it's a good time. Good time to be had up here. Yeah,
great setup too. Yeah, you had the arena in the hotel.
There you go. Yeah, there you go.
Which really helped the parents.
Yes, not much of a commute that way. Yeah, not having to drag kids around and, you know, equipment bags and all that happy stuff. So, yeah.
Or worry about driving after being up all night, talking strategy with the other parents.
Oh, dear.
you've been pretty busy the last little while. Everyone's logging into Spectres Hockey, and you got the hockey news going, and I haven't been able to brush up on my German enough quite yet to read your German post, but you've been hard at her.
Yeah, it's been every season's busy, and every season has its own you know, unique stories and you know, things for coverage and that. But this year with this trade deadline's been kind of an unusual one. Excuse me, because you know, you've got so many players that are actually, here we are a week out, as you know, as we're discussing this, a week out from March 8, and or less than a week now, and there's still a large number of notable players still available in the market, even some new names popping up, and you know, there's several reasons for that. I mean, you've got a lot of teams that don't have much cap space, so they're either trying to accrue enough cap space to be able to take on a guy by deadline day, or you're seeing like what we saw with the Tanev deal and the Lyubushkin deals this past week, where it's our good old favorite three-way deals where you get one team that's got cap space willing to be a third party broker. So, you know, so that's been a big part of why I think we haven't seen as much movement as we had in previous. Plus, we really haven't really been too many big names up until lately. You know, I mean, Jake Guentzel was flying around out there with the Penguins, but, you know, it was sort of, are they going to move him? Are they not? So you couldn't even really know which way to go with that. No offense to Chris Tanev, but when you're the biggest name on the block for weeks, that doesn't really say much about the quality of talent that's in the trade market at the time. It's kind of perked up now. We've heard more about Jacob Markstrom, so that's kind of got everybody a bit excited and that sort of thing. You know, Pavel Buchnevich is another guy that's popped up lately, so that's kind of added a bit of spice. But you think back to last year, you know, you had guys like Patrick Kane was, you know, out there. Tarasenko was a bigger name last year than he was this season. Some of the shine's kind of gone off him, but this a year ago he was a big name, and all and so on. And let's face it, you had Elias Lindholm get traded, you know, in the end of January. So that took at that time the biggest name off the market. So it's that's been a factor too. It could set up actually, though, it could work in our favor for those of us who cover deadline day, because it means we'll have a lot more to write about than, okay, where's this third line checking forward going, and where's this number five defenseman going to get traded? Because, you know, there'll still be should still be a decent number of recognizable names still, you know, in the trade market, fingers crossed, by this Friday.
Well, there has been some other names, but it's all unfounded rumor websites that have no face, and people are
Clickbait.
trying to pick up on that crap. But you're what we've been seeing from legitimate sources is pretty quiet. So maybe by the deadline day itself might actually be something worth watching.
And that's why, and that's what I mean with all these different names that are still here, you know, less than a week out, that are still in the market. And as you said, there could be a player or two that gets moved that has not appeared in any of the you know, any of the trade lists from TSN or Sportsnet or Daily Faceoff or ESPN. So there could always be that element of of surprise in there as well.
So with all the big names in air quotes out there, I think that kind of that does open up a little bit of a door for Hughes to get some decent value off players that he's willing to move. I mean, David Savard, his name's been out there, Jake Allen, even Joel Armia recently.
And I mean, well, I mean, I think, you know, Habs fans' appetites a little bit whetted, if you will, by what he got for Sean Monahan. And may I just say, as a quick aside, two things. First of all, that is outstanding asset management by Ken Hughes. That's a master class in asset management. You acquire a guy from a team that gave you a first round pick to take him off your hands, and then almost 2 years later, you trade him to another team and get another first round pick. I mean, yeah, okay, it's the Winnipeg Jets. The pick's probably going to be at the bottom 10 or 12. It's a first round pick. If you don't use it for yourself, you could use it as a trade chip to bring in a decent young player from a team that is lacking a first round pick, like, oh, I don't know, Tampa Bay, Boston. I'm just throwing them out there as examples. But yeah, so I think we're everybody's kind of, as Habs fans, you're kind of waiting to see, ooh, you know, what could he get for David Savard? You mentioned Savard. His name popped up back in January, then it kind of went away because you know, he said, I'm not actively shopping this guy, you know, I'm not shopping this guy. I'm listening, but I'm not shopping. I'm not trying to move him. But of course, once Tanev got moved, that just re-sparked everything again. And you know, so yeah, could David Savard be moved if somebody meets Hughes's asking price? In other words, if you're offering him a first round pick, I'm sure he will listen to that offer. You know, if somebody loses their mind and offers Jake Allen a first round pick, he's gone. You know, I think he's gone if you can get a second and a prospect. You know, I think he's gone if you can get a second for him, to be honest. Again, no disrespect to Jake, but he's considered a backup goalie at this stage, and goalies usually don't tend to fetch much of a return, especially backups. Joel Armia, right now, I'd say you're looking at, if you can get a second rounder for him, you're doing well. You know, even though, yes, he's played well of late, I know, but he's got that pattern of inconsistency with his scoring. So, hey, if you get a first round, we're all doing the happy dance if you're a Habs fan. But I'd say if you get a second round, you're thinking that way. But the other thing I wanted to mention, though, about Sean Monahan is you can really tell what a presence he was on this team and how much he meant in that dressing room by the team's performance since the trade. You know, they have struggled in part because he's not there to take the key faceoffs. They miss the offense that he provides because they were already, struggling with secondary scoring, beyond the first line. And it's really apparent now that that Monahan's gone. I mean, New Hook's back, and he's playing as well as he can. But he missed what, 3 months with a high ankle sprain, and it takes a while to get back into the rhythm again. So, I think a lot of Habs fans tend to kind of underestimate just how important some of these guys are, and that's why if they trade David Savard. I'm going to tell Habs fans listening right now, don't get upset if the defense winds up giving up more goals and more scoring chances than they have. You will really see what a difference he makes if he's not there.
Just like Monahan, the stability that Monahan brought to the lineup, that's what you see from Savard. While people kind of poo-poo his actual play, even though he's being played up much higher in the lineup than he should, but the fact that he's there, he's eating up a lot of ice time and insulating the younger guys.
And he's providing that leadership. He's providing, the benefit of his experience. And you take that out the same as Monahan did, I mean, and David Savard won a Stanley Cup with Tampa Bay. So he knows, and that's not a knock against Monahan either. Monahan had been in the league 10 years. He, you pick up a lot in 10 years. And I don't blame Ken Hughes for trading. Ken Hughes promised him, if we can get a suitable deal, we're going to send you to a team where you get a chance to win the Stanley Cup. Again, Ken Hughes doing right by his players. Could Monahan come back? I'd like to see him come back if he wants to. But if he
I
doesn't,
don't expect that.
no, I don't either. But I said, if he wants to, and if he's willing to do it for a reasonable contract, sure. But if not, there's other places you can go. But yeah, I just caution people as well, and I'm hope I'm not going off on too much of a tangent here, Blaine. But I've also read, from I'm not gonna say their names or anything like that. But I've read from people that I think should know better, sometimes suggesting, well, we should trade Mike Matheson while his trade value is high. And I'm sitting here going, okay. And who's next after that, right? Like, how many veterans do you want to trade off of this roster? Or I've also heard the suggestion, maybe they should trade one of their younger players too while their value's high. Maybe look at moving Caulfield, or maybe you look at moving, you know what I mean? Yeah. Maybe look at moving somebody like Arber Jacki, who's, listen, I don't think his value is going to be high, but you know what I mean? And I'm sitting here going, okay, so you want to move a couple of the younger guys. At what point do you stop doing that before you all of a sudden you wake up one day and realize this team is nothing more but a development club for the better teams in the league? Because that's the slippery slope you're going to go down if you think, oh, let's trade that guy, let's trade that guy, let's trade that guy. No. You need to maintain a core. You have to maintain a core to build around, And Mike Matheson right now is part of that core. You don't move.
Absolutely.
Yes, I understand. Yes, he can make. He has. It makes his defensive boo-boo sometimes. That's what happens when you're a puck-moving defenseman. Sometimes, whoops, it's going the other way. But overall, this guy logs a lot of ice time. He's having a great year offensively. I mean, people tend to forget he's in the top five in scoring on the club. He's doing very well. You don't move this guy. You don't move that guy. You just don't.
No, he's the one that's he's the number one D-man on this team right now. He's logging all those minutes. He's playing in all situations. And what that's doing, it's letting the younger guys take on bite-sized pieces as they develop. Sure, his value is very, very high right now. You could probably get the equivalent of a first plus for him. But why can't you do that next year?
If you're comfortable enough in the young players that you have by that point, that you feel that Matheson is a luxury, if you've reached that point, that you really, okay, sure, but not while they're in the middle of the second full season of a rebuild. You know, I gotta say, Blaine, Jack Todd of the Montreal Gazette a couple of months ago came out with the perfect analogy. He said, some Habs fans, they want this team to win every game and win the draft lottery.
Yeah.
It's like, pick a lane, because neither of those is going to work. If you're winning every game, you're not going to win the draft lottery. Okay.
Well, they came close in 2021. They went to the Stanley Cup final and they got the first
But
overall
they
pick
didn't
right
win
after that.
they didn't win every game, Blaine. That's the
It's true.
thing.
That's true.
That year, they backed into the playoffs that year. But honestly, there's a level of impatience there among some Habs fans that I get tired of, and I see it from people that I follow or I read, that I sit down and I look at them and go, you should know better. Because this is the second full season of a rebuild. What were you expecting in the second full season of a rebuild? Were you really expecting a playoff berth? Were you really expecting, let alone cup contention? You know, this team, the way it's built, you have to look at it and understand that this is still being built with young talent. And they're going to make mistakes. Some of them are in different levels of ability and experience. It's going to take time. That being said, I mean, there's some very positive things I'm seeing out of this season. You know, I mean, first of all, they are healthier. Yes, granted, yes, they lost Kirby Dach for the season. And oh my God, how much better would the secondary scoring be if we had him for a full season? Right? You know, him and
Yeah.
Slefkovský and that chemistry that they were starting to develop in preseason, in that first game of the season before Doc got hurt, or Newhook as well, being gone for 3 months, you know. But they are actually healthier. I mean, here we are, March, and hey, you know, Slefkovský's still here, Caulfield's still here, Gouley's still here. You know, we're not sitting here looking at six or eight guys that are listed as gone for the season, right? They're still here and
Yeah.
still playing well. But just very quickly, I mean, I have no concern about their goaltending. Montembeau is a reliable starter. In fact, it pisses me off how he's being overlooked by certain talking heads when they come up with their dream team for Canada at the Foreign Nations tournament next year, or the Olympics in 2 years. And nobody mentions Montembeau. Well, I think one guy did. I think maybe it was Kevin Weeks who mentioned Montembeau. But regardless, you know, Monty's playing very well. You know, and the only reason why, because we've got this three-headed, you've got this hydra of goaltenders right now. He's not getting really the full opportunity to really, prove that point. He will next season. Whether it's himself and Jake Allen or himself and Caden Primo, and I think it's going to be him and Caden Primo, because Primo has also improved, I think, by leaps and bounds this season. You
Just
know,
look at his game against Tampa last night.
exactly. You know, so I think we all know, can see the writing on the wall here, what it's going to be for the goaltending. And I think the goaltending is going to be fine. The defense, yes, of course, we need more experience there. They need more skill there. But Caden Gooley is proving himself as a reliable, I think, top two defenseman. You know, I think Arbor Jacki, that time he spent in the minors, did him a world of good, because he's playing a much more responsible game defensively now compared to what he was. You know, he's also picking his spots. He's not being like a big giant puppy running around trying to hit and punch everything, you know. Which was entertaining to watch last year, let's be honest. But yeah, he needed more discipline to his game. And, you know, Nick Suzuki just continues to show, why he is the best player on this team, why he's the captain, and why he is moving up the ranks of the best two-way forwards in the game right now. Caulfield is getting his groove back. A lot of people are, I've noticed, have been complaining, well, his production's down, his production's down. It's like, guys, remember, he came back from a shoulder, and he had major shoulder surgery done. And if everybody recall, the first couple of months of the season, his shot didn't quite seem to have it, didn't quite seem to have the same zip before it finally came back. It takes time to recover from significant injuries like that. You know, now he's kind of back in his happy place more. I think a full healthy season next year, you'll see him back in that 40 goal area. I'd be more concerned if he was still down with if he still only had like 10 goals. I'd be more concerned about that right now instead of, bumping up at 20 right now. And
He's
finally,
also a more complete player.
yes, he's improving that way, And of course, the main point, Slafkovský, big Slaf, the improvement we've seen from him. What a surprise. I think we talked about that back with the last time I was, you guys had me on the show. And I said, if you're worried about this guy, I said, put him on the top line with Suzuki and Caulfield. I said, what have you got to lose? And I said, don't just put him there for a few games, leave him there for a couple of weeks and see what happens. And look what's happened. Okay, yes, I'm going to pat myself on the back for that one. I'm sure I'm not the only person who mentioned.
Don't hurt your shoulder.
My shooting arm. It's all connected to the wrist.
That's right.
Anyway, but just the development we're seeing from him. We're not hearing all that BS about him being a first round bust anymore. Nobody's saying that anymore. This guy, his play with the puck, without the puck, his awareness now, just on the ice, has just improved so much in the last 3 months. And that's the thing I'm the most excited about, to be honest. I mean, Suzuki, not surprised at all. I expected that, with this. With Caulfield, I've already talked about and all that. We know who he is. And as you said, he's a more complete player, Gouley and so on. But Slaf is just making it just a huge difference here. We're seeing now. Finally seeing what this kid's capable of, what we've got to look forward to. And, oh man, this is going to be exciting. This is going to be exciting. He's just scratching the surface of his potential right now. In another year or two, oh my God, it's just going to be something to see.
Well,
So
he's
go ahead.
and people were crapping on him for his skating, and you watch him play now, it's end to end. He's keeping up with everybody. There's no one that's able to lap him. He's playing well defensively. He's winning his board battles. His forecheck, he's putting pressure on. He's going to the net. All these things that you want from a power forward, he's giving you. Plus, he's got an excellent shot that he's able to release quicker now. That was a big thing at the start. Now he's doing it. And his playmaking skills are out of this world.
Oh, that's always been his strength, was his playmaking. But yeah, now he's released on that shot. All that work with the shot doctors paid off.
It
People
did.
laughed about that, but it's like, hey, nobody's laughing now. He lets that go. He lets It's quick and it's heavy. There's a lot on that, a lot of velocity on that when he on that release. So yeah. I understand. Look, all the losing, sure, it sucks. I mean, yes, we were all mentally prepared going into the season. Nope, they're not going to make the playoffs. We know that, but we're hoping for some improvement. But yeah. But yes, the losing can get to you, especially when you consider that at the All-Star break, this team was playing 500 hockey. It had been from the start of the season onward. They had a couple little dips and then they would get it back, but they were 500. And I think that's the team they truly are. Losing Monahan hurt, no question. But I just think, if things go the way that we hope for next season with a healthier roster, with Doc back there, and if he and Slefkovsky, renew that chemistry they had, now you've got two strong scoring lines going on, because we all know Suzuki and Caulfield, peas in a pod, there's no worries there, right? But you go along with that, and then it's going to be what Hughes can bring in the offseason, or who knows, maybe at the trade deadline, because there's also kind of talk about that. Maybe he's not doesn't just bring in draft picks or prospects here. Maybe he could also get a good young player who fits well within this. Somebody who's mid to late 20s fits into that timeline of what they're trying to build here, right? And if you can't, but I definitely think he's going to be bringing in a score in the offseason for sure. If he's loading up
100%.
on, if he's loading up on draft picks and prospects, he's not hanging on to them all. Some of that's going to be used as trade bait to bring in somebody. So, and I also wouldn't be surprised to see him go after maybe another experienced defenseman as well. Again, not somebody in their 30s, but yeah, somebody sort of late 20s who can again help provide that experience and that leadership and skills that they need.
Well, I mean, we're looking at a team that clearly has a ton of holes, but
Course.
the pieces that are in place already are quality. So like we talked about, you talked about Suzuki. Now he's almost a point per game player. He's also one of the better defense two-way centers. Can we now say he's a first line center? Is that still illegal to be mentioning that? Are we called homers if we do it? Because he's done everything a first line center needs to do and more. Yeah.
And that's the thing. Again, Blaine, up until the start of this season, yeah, you were hearing that. I didn't buy into it because I was seeing the steady progression. Okay. But I could kind of see where the critics were coming from because it was just like, yeah, but look at his points. And I'm like, yeah, but look who he had playing with him last year. He only had his running mate Caulfield for half the season and then he was gone because of an injury. You know, when you don't have very much to pass to, right, or to play with, yeah, your points are going to be down. But regardless, you know, this season he has really silenced those critics. When you're up to a point per game, okay, you can't sit there with a straight face and go, no, he's not a first line center. Well, yeah, he kind of sort of is now, right? So, yeah. But again, it just all ties into all this improvement. I mean, as you said, the core is coalescing, for lack of a better word. It's starting to come together. We're starting to see. I mean, we already knew who the obvious pieces were, but now there's no question that Slefkovský's a core player. There's no question now Gouley's a core player. There's no question now that Montembeau's a core player. You can see the guys now that you're going to build around, and that's going to be there for the long haul. So it's just going to be a case. Now, again, this is a development year for a lot of guys, for guys like Jack Eye, obviously. You know, you can consider it, you know, the same thing for, you know, for guys like Harris, you know, for other younger defensemen, for other, the younger forwards, that it's, again, it's a development thing. And even some of those, maybe one or two of those kids ends up getting traded, you know, to bring in a better player. That's possible too. It's good that they're in a position too, where they've got so many defensemen on the club and in, yeah, and in the system that, you know, that one or two of those prospects are going to end up being used as a trade chip. You know, now is it going to be Lane Hudson? Relax. No, it's not going to be Hudson. Relax. It's not going to be Ryan Backer. Sorry. No, those guys aren't going anywhere, you know, but there will be, there could be others, right? There could be guys even on the roster right now, not with the last name of Gouley. You know, I would even say Jack Eye's not necessarily safe. You know,
no, I don't think he is. Yet.
I don't think they want to trade him. They like the physicality he brings. They love that. They love that big shot that he's got. I'd like to see him on the power play more often, to be honest, with that big blast, you know. But I don't think he's necessarily safe either. So, you know, there's still tweaking to be done. There's still holes to be filled, but you can see the direction it's going in. I would say for next season, if we don't see any improvement over what we've seen this season, then maybe we can start being critical. I don't buy being critical this season. Anytime I've read any critical, I'm just like, yeah, okay, whatever. I know what I'm seeing too. Yeah. And you know, but this was not a year of high expectations. Next year shouldn't be high expectations either, but I think there is an expectation to start to see that first big step forward now. And if we don't see it next year, well, then we can sit down and start going, okay, what's going wrong here? Okay, where's the problem? Can we really identify, you know? It's like the criticism about Marty Saint-Louis. I started seeing some of that. I'm sure you have. It showed up in the Montreal Gazette too, you know? Are the fans getting tired of Martin Saint-Louis? Is the honeymoon over for Martin Saint-Louis? It's like, this guy's growing along with his team, you know? Of course, he's not perfect. Of course, remember, yes, he still lacks NHL experience, blah, blah, blah. This is his second full season as an NHL coach, you know? And sure, he's going to make some mistakes, but he's growing with his team. And I like the direction they're going with because these players are going through a wall for this guy. Say what you will about Montreal, say it what you will about their deficiencies and whatever, but you can't question their compete level. You just can't. These guys can be down by 5 with 3 minutes left in the third, and they're still coming at you. They're like, you know, well, we're down 5-0. Well, we're going to wreck this guy's shutout, you know?
Well, this team has his – when he was playing, this is how he played.
Yes.
The team took on his personality when he was a player. And that's what you want to see. Like, you talked about progression. this is not the year to see team progression. This is a year for individual progression.
Exactly.
And we're seeing that. Next year, I agree. Team progression has to be there. You need a better, you need to improve on the penalty kill. The power play is showing a lot more.
Yeah.
Probably because these young players who are improving individually are able to produce.
Yeah.
So of course, you know, you got that extra space, you're going to score some more. So this year, yeah, it's getting a top 10 pick is not a bad thing.
No, no. You know, I mean, I'm not sitting here, you know, I wasn't wishing for them to tank this season. I was hoping they would finish at 500. That's what I was like, if they can finish the season as a 500 hockey club, I'm happy with that, because that's a sign of real progress. Doesn't look like they're going to be at 500, but they were at 500 for most of the season. So I can live with this. You know, I can understand, again, as we mentioned, about the effect of trading away Monahan had and the potential effect it could have if they trade away Savard. I think they will struggle even more. But regardless, you know, I liked what I saw from the start of the season up until the All-Star break. I liked what I was seeing. That's the direction that I was thinking of seeing the team going in. And in the last two games, though, even though they were losses, they acquitted themselves well. Against the Panthers. Against
good teams.
Yes. Against a Stanley Cup contender in the Panthers. And against a team that is like the Lightning, that's no longer a cup contender, but is still dangerous. It's still got a lot of talent, can still hurt you. You know, a year ago, the Lightning would have blown these guys out, you know, 6-2 easily, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Easily.
By the first.
And yeah. Yeah. Like, the game would have been over after the first period. And the score at the end of the first is Tampa Bay 4, Montreal nothing. That's what it would have been. Right. And instead, they needed a shootout to beat the Habs. To beat this young, rebuilding, at times struggling Habs team. So yeah, part of it is they get up too for bigger opponents. I mean, look, they've given teams like the Rangers fits. You know they're always up whenever they face the Leafs. But whenever they're playing somebody like Columbus or something like that, well, they kind of they don't really see them as the benchmark they go for. Though they did beat Anaheim and Arizona, so yay. But you know. Yeah, they had problems with teams like Buffalo because they're right on the same level, and I don't really think that's not what you're aiming for. They're aiming to prove themselves against better talented teams.
Now, we're going to take a quick commercial break, and then when we come back, we'll get into some of these NHL rumors and talk more about some of the Montreal Canadiens who are floating around in there. We've touched on it a bit, but I think we'll get into it a little deeper. And if we have anything to rant about in that half, we will do it 100%.
Oh, yeah.
So just stick around and we'll be right back after this. Welcome back to Habs Unfiltered. Those were some amazing commercials. And lo and behold, as if by magic, Treg Wilson has joined the show.
Hi, everybody.
Q Steel and Cold Steve Austin music.
I'm going to get my protein drink here.
Because he said so.
That's Stone Cold!
By God!
We're going to cover the rumors as they pertain to the Canadians at the very least. But Treg, because you missed the first half, I'm going to give you the opportunity to kick it off in the rumor realm. So what is it you want to know? Ask Lyle. We have the expert here.
Well, I'm such a good insider. I don't need to ask questions to people on what I need to know. I have 14 hours in my insider thing. So the more hours you have, the more in the know you are. Insider. For each hour is a contact you have that gives you information. I think this is going to be a very quiet deadline for the Montreal Canadiens. I mean, we have Hughes now saying, oh, we're okay with three goalies to the end of the season. I mean, I think that's a tactic to sit there and say we're not as desperate to get rid of, let's be honest, Jake Allen as we were 3 months ago. I do believe they don't want to trade David Savard right now, unless, of course, they get that first in a prospect and someone overpays. I think Jordan Hare's name's coming up a lot, but again, I think it's going to take. I think he's a package deal in the offseason for something else. So personally, I wouldn't be surprised if Allen or there's a little move here or there, but personally, I think it's going to be. I think Canadians, if anything, are going to be a third party in somebody else's trade if anything happens at the deadline. So I don't know if you're seeing any of that out there or that's what you're hearing, but that's how I think it's going. I think Montreal's going to be very busy at the draft and in the offseason, more so than at the trade deadline.
Yeah,
So,
that's pretty much what we talked about just briefly, Blaine and I,
yeah.
in the first segment there. Yeah, I'm not going to go over the same ground
Yeah.
again. I mean,
Yeah.
you touched on it. You know, I yeah, if somebody's willing to step up and pay what Ken Hughes wants for David Savard, which again, you said he's not shopping him, but if
Yeah.
somebody's willing to step up and overpay, he'll do it. Yeah, I don't think there's very much of a market for Jake Allen right now.
No.
That's just the reality of the situation. They'll try and move him out in the offseason, as you said. You know, Harris is, as you said, came up, but he's yeah, you on his own, he's not going to fetch you much. You package him and off he goes, because you're right. As we've Blaine and I discussed, the offseason is when Hughes is going to make his biggest moves. There is some sort of just general talk that, you know, maybe Hughes could bring in a quality player at the deadline, not necessarily be a seller, but also perhaps a buyer. I don't really know what's out there that he could do that. Of course, that I'm just talking about what's the names that have been kicking around in the trade market. That would kind of fit what they would be looking for. A guy who'd be in his mid to late 20s would fit that timeline for the rebuild that they're looking for, who playing either on defense or up front, be it like a secondary scorer or what have you. No, I think the bigger moves are coming for the Habs in the offseason. He's going to amass what he can for draft picks and prospects and use some of them as trade chips.
I do believe he's going to try to shop Armia now that he's hot. It kind of has a
So
I
hot.
don't think I'd wait on Armia until next year. Well, he is like
He's played
he's
well
a
since the All-Star break.
yeah, and I
He's the
think
Habs Zoolander.
I know he has another year in his contract, but I think he'd be smart to trade while the it's high, the rather than wait till next year to see if you get which Armia you get. So, and I don't know if there's a market for Tanner Pearson. So, I think Tanner Pearson's like who that they had someone last year too that was on there last year, and they couldn't trade him off. I forget who it was, but it just they'll probably just keep him, and when his contract's over, it's over, and it's off the books.
Well, Armia has shown that in the playoffs, he's got a very high value. So, what teams could possibly be on the lookout for a guy like that right now?
That's a good question when you mention that, because oh my goodness. I'm trying to think who could use this at Toronto,
Toronto could
perhaps.
use a guy like that.
Yeah, but you'd have to retain salary though. They're
I
so
think.
tight to the cap.
I think it could be a bubble team that's looking for that guy on their third line that can help kill penalties, give them a little bit of more scoring on the third line. So maybe a New Jersey or a Carolina, maybe. I don't know.
Detroit, perhaps,
Detroit,
you know,
maybe. Detroit's on that bubble. Are they going to sell? Are they going to be hard buyers? Are they going to be? They're not going to sell, but are they going to be hard buyers or cautious buyers? That's
yeah,
where you
that's
got
the
to look
thing.
at
Yeah,
Detroit.
they're not selling
Yeah.
this year. Yzerman's buying, but yeah,
Yeah.
it's which way is he going to go with it? The team's playing well. I mean, okay, yeah, they've dropped their last couple of games, but overall, they're playing well. So. Yeah, Yzerman's going to be a buyer for sure. Maybe Colorado for that third, you know, maybe a more depth at center, somebody like
Could be.
Armia, maybe. But again, he'd be way down though, I think, their wish list. He'd be almost like if they haven't addressed that need and there's like 30 minutes left in the till the deadline and there's nobody left. Okay, if Montreal's willing to retain salary, if we give them something decent, we might take this guy. Yeah.
But I mean,
What about
I just
Nashville?
think it
They're
could be
in a wild card spot. And they could always use a little bit more depth.
Yeah, and they're moving. Yeah, Barry Trotz is in what Pierre Lebrun called a hold or buy position. He's not selling. All this talk about UC Saros could be traded to New Jersey, and oh, this guy's going here, and Tommy Novak, apparently they're closing in on a new contract for him, so he's not going anywhere because his name's been kicking around. No, he's definitely hold or buy. Sorry. So yeah, maybe somebody. Yeah, maybe Armia could go there, but I'm not sure if that's really the kind of need. I think they'd want to grab another scorer if that's at all possible. I'm not sure that Armia really addresses that need, but
Vegas could pick him up. Vegas has everybody on LTIR again, so they could.
yeah, but Vegas is going for the big fish. They take after their owner. It's, you know, go big or go home, right? Yeah. So they always try to make the big splash at the deadline. They need a scoring winger with Mark Stone, because, you know, Mark Stone out for the rest of the season and perhaps could miss the start of the playoffs. So that's why Jake Gensel's been brought up. Pavel Buchnevich has been brought up. That's just two. There's, think of any other right wingers that scoring right wingers that you can think of. Maybe there's somebody again that nobody's talked about who could end up getting moved. But yeah, they'll definitely be looking at, you know, one of the more notable scoring forwards at the deadline. Maybe if they have room afterwards, you could look for somebody like Armia, but yeah.
So then there you go. I think it's going to be a quiet trade deadline for the Canadians. I really do. Unless someone takes a bite on Allen, I don't see much happening, really. And like you said, unless someone really wants to overpay for David Savard.
Yeah.
Which is possible.
There's some guys coming with Lane Hutson going to be, he's almost 100% guaranteed to sign by the end of the season.
Yeah.
Ryan Bacher, there's two guys right there. They got to make some space for somehow.
Yeah. But that's something though you can do in the off season as well. I mean, you don't have to try and do it right now, obviously, but yeah, if you can do it in the off season, you know, Savard, if Savard isn't traded at the trade deadline, he could go this summer.
Could, yeah. Or next year's trade deadline.
Exactly. So you've got a lot of, with him having that extra year and having the high regard that he still has, you know, around the league, and the value that he does have, kind of as that shot blocking penalty killer. You've got options there. So, you know, it's kind of in a good position to have.
Now, do you think if he waited on Monahan and Monahan plays like he is in Winnipeg, he'd get more for Monahan, say now or closer to the trade deadline?
No, that was a move that had to be made when it was made, and to the team that it was made to. You know, I mean, Blaine and I, again, we talked about this in the first segment. You know, that was a masterclass by Ken Hughes on asset management. You acquire a guy that the team gave you a first round pick to take off their hands 2 years ago, and nearly 2 years later, you trade him to another team and get another first round pick back. That was beautiful. That's beautiful. That's what, if you're a general manager, that's what you want. That's the dream scenario. So yeah, or one of them. And yeah, I really honestly don't think he could have gotten more, but that was the right move, the right team, the right time. Sometimes you just got to strike when that iron's hot, and the iron was hot that for, you know, on February 2nd. So I have no complaints about that move at all. Then that draft pick, as Blaine and I had talked about too, that's going to probably be in the bottom 10 of the draft, you know, of the first round. So that's going to be used as a trade chip, I think, you know.
I truly believe we should kind of forget about the trade deadline and all the moves and what he's going to do. Yeah. And look, I think the draft's going to be a very busy day for the Montreal Canadiens.
Very,
because I think Ken Hughes wants to start taking that corner and say, okay, it's time for us to start adding and start moving this needle so we're closer to a playoff spot. Because, I mean, healthy this year, I still think they're not picking top 10 in the draft if they stayed healthy.
Yeah,
I don't think they make the playoffs, but I think they were more of a just outside playoff team than they were where they're at now. I don't believe they're going to fall much lower than six or drafting it much higher than sixth or seventh. They're kind of going to stay right where they're at. Mm. 20 games. There's 20 games left. Even if they go 5-15, they're not moving very far up or down.
Maybe they win them. Maybe they put themselves, yeah, like I said, maybe they get in a position, they get lucky and the lottery balls drop their way. But, you know, hey, we got lucky once. We got Slav. Be happy with what you get if you end up, you know, with the sixth overall pick.
But even with the sixth overall pick, you're almost guaranteed to get, with all the D that's probably going to go in the top five, there's at least two or three D, and that Paraka D could go higher than the guy who scored the 30 goals and the OHL there, Pariah.
I know who you're talking about. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Anyway, some are saying now that he may jump into the top five. So do you have Lidstrom, you have Katten, you have Demidov, you have Yamachuk. Is it Yamachuk? And you have Iginla.
He's a D-man, though.
Yeah.
He's D, but and then you have, okay, so even fours, Iginla, you have Iginla, Iserman, Demidov, Katten.
Yep.
You know, anyone not named Celebrini.
And honestly, I, you know, they've gone against, Ken Hughes has kind of gone against type, if you will. He's done the unexpected every time in the first round when he's had the first round pick. We all expected he was going to grab Shane Wright, and he took Slefkovsky. Even though I know it was building towards that, you know, but the expectation was on the floor that day, we all were expecting Shane Wright to be called. And when he called Slefkovsky, just that the reaction alone spoke volumes. But then last year, taking Reinbacher, when Michkov was there, and let's not get all of that nonsense again, but he went against type. Everybody expected he's going to go for Michkov, or he's going to grab a forward, grabs another defenseman. What's he doing? This isn't a draft deep in defenseman. Why? This is forwards. Why is he drafting a defenseman? And then we found out that there were three or four other teams who really coveted Reinbacher, you know, for very good reasons, as it turns out. And so now it's like, well, yeah, it's a draft deep in defenseman, but come on, Montreal is just chock-a-block with defense prospects now. They don't need more. They've got plenty. Unless you're planning on taking two or three of those and using them as trade chips, in which case, well, yeah, okay, you're going to need to draft a defenseman. He's got to go for a forward, right? In a draft that's deep in defenseman, look for him to pick a forward.
Yeah, I think, too, with the defense he has now, he has to move a defenseman. A defenseman or two. Like, for instance, I know Blaine and I've talked about it before, Mike Matheson. Once they figure out Lane Hudson's ready,
when he's ready, not now.
So a lot of people are like, "Oh, I would trade Matheson. We got Hudson coming." But yes, we do, and yes, let's hope that Hudson can be the Hudson we want him to be in the NHL. But we don't know that yet. Yeah. So if you're going to sit there and go, "Matheson, you're gone. We got Hudson," and all of a sudden Hudson's Victor Mete 2.0.
Exactly.
You're screwed.
Yeah.
We just don't want to rush these guys.
Exactly. Again, Blaine and I talked about that in the first stat. We said the same thing. I mentioned Mike Matheson because I keep seeing people say, they should trade Mike Matheson now while his value is high. Well, his value will be high next year, dumbass. And in which case, if Hudson is everything, as you said, we think he's going to be, then you trade him. Don't rush things.
He's probably actually going to be higher next year because you can build off his probable 50-point season this year, and then you can, and then if he's just as hot offensively anyway, you can sit there and say, "Oh, we have your number one or number two offensive defenseman. We want this haul. Thank you very much."
And how much more valuable? How much more valuable is a top pairing defenseman in a cap where it's about just under $88 million a year? Right now, it's 83. He's taking up less percentage of the cap at that point, and he's making under $5 million.
Yeah.
How much more valuable is a top pairing defenseman then?
Huge.
Yeah.
Huge. Like, big time.
Like, I mean, David Savard, you can get away with trading David Savard because you got guys like Jack Eye, you got guys like Struble, you got guys like Kovacevic. Harris
can play the rights.
Yeah.
Harris can play the right. You have all these guys that can play that style of game that David Savard played. As a matter of fact, Jack Eye, I think, is going to be a better defenseman than everyone thinks he's going to be, both sides of the ice, offensively and defensively. But that's Jaden Struble. I think Jaden Struble's going to be a left-handed David Savard, basically, is what I think he's going to be. He's going to have a little bit of offensive flair, but he's going to be that guy that's going to be a warrior and put his body in front of everything that comes his way and do what he can to, you know, play a hard defensive game. So Savard right now is expendable. The question is, do you want to get rid of that leadership on a young D-core right now? And I think that's why Ken Hughes is saying, He may not be a first and a high prospect value to you, but in terms of off ice value to me right now, that's what I need for you to take him.
Yep, exactly. So,
and if, you know, other GMs will understand that and they'll go, well, do we want to overpay for him? Is he going to give us that Stanley Cup? Is he the missing piece? Yes. All right, let's go get him. No. All right, Kent, we'll see it. We'll talk to you next year.
Yeah.
I think the bigger value in any trade right now for Hughes is the cap space he's going to gain. He may want a certain value back, but he might take a little bit less just to offload some of these contracts. Not necessarily right now. I think the trade deadline is going to kind of pave the way for conversations with other GMs. But come draft day, I think you're right. I think there's going to be a bunch of moves because it's not necessarily next season that they need the money, but the season after when Slafkovský is going to be going into his next contract.
Yep. And that's not going to be a bridge deal. If he develops this, what we're seeing from him this season, if that carries forward, that will not be a bridge deal. That's going to be 7 or 8 years, and it's going to be expensive.
I mean, you even
maybe
after
like a Svechnikov type of value, like 7.75, 7.8,
gonna be higher
around there.
The way the market's growing with the cap, that's going to be higher. That's going to be higher. I know that people are going to say they're not. No way they'll pay Slaf more than Suzuki or Caulfield. You look at the cap and where it is, and unfortunately, this is the way it goes. As the cap goes higher, so does the value. And I guarantee you, between now and then, there's going to be teams that are going to have players that are kind of comparable, and they're going to overpay. And Slaf and his agent are going to point at that and say, "That's what I want," and you can't blame them because the market. If the market's set. There you go. If they could get him signed for, you know, 7.5 mil a season on 8 years, if he blossoms into what we're expecting him to be and what we're starting to see from him, that will be such a bargain that will you look back on that and you'll laugh at what a steal that was.
Well, I mean, going
off
into
where he's been, yeah. So if they can pull it off where he's making about the same or even a little bit less than Caulfield and Suzuki.
Oh yeah.
A top line of three guys making under $8 million, that'll be unheard of in the NHL in two seasons.
Yep.
So 24, 25 is probably the most important season for them because they have Justin Barron. Who else here? Just hold on a sec. They have everyone. Justin Barron, Jordan Harris, Jaden Struwe, Caden Gooley, all RFAs, Yuri Slafkovský. You're losing Armia, you're losing Jake Evans, you're losing Mike Pezzetta, David Savard's gone, Kovacevic's gone. Dvorak's gone. Harvey Bernard's a RFA, but I think he's like Yolonen. You're going to, maybe not.
Yeah.
So it's going to be, plus you have Heinemann, RFA, Sean Farrell, 10.2 arbitrary RFA. So there's a lot of young guys you're going to want to sign. Some of them you're going to get for cheap because they haven't, like Jane Struble probably won't cost you a whole hell of a lot, but
no.
Baron might not, if he's still there, might
Baron
not cost
not
you a whole.
There.
Baron may not be there. I truly believe Harris and Baron are the two defensemen they're going to dangle and say, there's still potential in these guys. Well, Baron. Harris, you know what he can do.
Yeah.
You know. So there's going to be a lot of, you're absolutely right, Blaine. It's not next year, but the year after that, they're really going to want to clear up that cap space. And the two biggest cap problems are still going to be there in Anderson and Gallagher. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah, which makes it really, really important that they have someone who is very good at negotiating contracts. And it just so happens they hired a former player agent.
That's why I don't. Yeah. That's why I don't have any worries about this team's future and what they're doing, because, you know, Hughes has already shown that he's got an eye for talent. He knows what to bring in. He knows what he's looking for. He's already shown. Now, of course, he's got all these, you know, obviously other people helping him doing this, but he's still the general manager. He's already shown that he can swing a hard bargain and win more often than not when it comes to trades, you know? And he's already shown as well with some of the signings he's made, his, you know, that experience as an agent. You know, so that's why I'm not all that worried going forward with the, you know, with him doing this job, because everything he's doing so far, he's got his vision. He's laying it out you know, the players that he wants for the timeline that he wants, but he's also getting him signed for the kind of contracts he wants. Yep. You know, Cole Caulfield is a perfect example of that one. You know, Caulfield's contract, you know, I mean, Jesus, you got him and Nick Suzuki, who was signed previously by, you know, by the previous management, you know, to a good deal, as it turns out, to turn a very good deal over the long term. And Caulfield now, same thing. So it's like I said, if you can get Slefkoski, you know, if you can get Slefkoski for $7.5 million, as you said, now you've got a first line that's making what, pulling in under what, $25 million a season? Yeah. You know, Jesus, look at Toronto's first line and tell me how much that cost, right? I mean, come on, you know. So
the smart thing about it too, Suzuki's contract's going to be look like one of the best contracts in the league.
Absolutely. Yep.
Sorry, what's his name from The Athletic? Dom there from The Athletic, who says it's one of the worst contracts in the league, but it's going to turn out to be probably one of the best. He's almost a point per game player now. And this is in a season where Caulfield isn't scoring the way he should be. He didn't get his 20th goal last night, although everyone, he did. He didn't have it, then he had it, then he didn't have it. And then Slefkoski, with his kind of dead season up till Christmas. Basically, Suzuki's been doing it on his own for 2 years. So for two seasons, Suzuki's been improving with no help. On his own, and now that he has a little bit of help, he's actually proving Hughes right when he said, I'd rather a guy like Bergeron, who's not going to score 100 points, right, but he's going to make everyone around him better as he improves as well. And I mean, Bergeron, I think, only had 1 or 2 point per game seasons where he averaged a point, but he's considered one of the best centers in the league, and I think Suzuki's there. And if I seen a chart a couple weeks ago saying Suzuki's actually in the Selke talk, he's not
He won't win it, but he's in the
talk.
He won't
win it, but he's in the talk. Like, he's in the top 10. He's there.
Yes.
And since January or Christmas, Suzuki is the third highest scoring center in the NHL right now.
Yeah.
So, people say, oh, you're cherry picking since Christmas. Do the full season. Okay, sure. But Montreal's going to have their first almost 80-point scorer since –
It was 75
plus point scorers since Kovalev.
Yeah.
In 2008 or not.
I just want to point out that when you're saying since Christmas, there was a specific change that happened at that point that I think made all the difference on that line. Slefkoski.
Slefkoski. Yeah. Yep. So everybody's benefiting on that. Caulfield regained his scoring touch. Look at that, with having that, you know, that full line going. Oh, gee, since Christmas. Oh. Here's a fun stat too. Okay, Nick Suzuki had 11 goals in 11 games in February. There was only one other player who scored more than him, Austin Matthews by one. So, yeah, this month was not – February was not a good month overall for Montreal, you know, because as we talked about, Blaine, the loss of Monahan really hurt the leadership and the experience in the room. But Suzuki has stepped up. There is no question. So, yeah.
And I also believe that tied a record for most goals in a month over the past 30 years with, I believe, Turgeon. I thought I seen the stat last night during the game with Turgeon and I forget who the other person was, but maybe actually it was
Brian Savage. October. That's right. Yeah. I saw that too. Mr. October, but that's right. Yep.
Yeah. So, but I mean, if you think about Suzuki too, everyone's going on, oh, Caulfield's not scored. Caulfield's six. Caulfield's still on pace to have a 60-point season. Caulfield's becoming a more complete player. Everyone's like, Caulfield's the one-dimensional. All he does is shoot the puck. All he does is score goals. Well, no, he's not anymore. Now he's setting up Suzuki. He's setting up Slefkoski. He's back-checking. He's playing a better – as a matter of fact, I don't like the plus-minus stack, but for a team who's like minus 173 on defense, Cole Caulfield's only a minus three.
Yeah.
For a guy playing on the top line. So – again, I don't like the plus minus stat. I think it's a bit of a
Nobody likes the plus minus
How
stat.
Bieber, like, oh no, I did all my job, but he didn't. I got scored on. I'm now a minus. Boo.
No, the
Right?
possession
So,
stats are very high.
yeah. So, I mean, to sit there and say Caulfield's one dimensional, I think he's proven this year he's not. And I think that's the reason why his goal total isn't as high as it was. Also, because everyone's covering Cole Caulfield. Everyone's like, oh, Caulfield's their scorer. And this is why Nick Suzuki's like, all right, I'll put it
And don't forget it,
in.
early in the season as well. I mean, he was still coming off of that, the major shoulder
Shoulder
surgery. So that
surgery.
takes time to make major shoulder surgery. I'm not drinking. No, not at all. I haven't drunk at all here at 11 o'clock in the morning. But no, but yeah, I mean, major shoulder surgery. It takes time, as Blaine and I discussed. It takes time to get over a significant joint injury like that. So. Yeah, now he's rounding back into form. I mean, yeah, he can still crank it. So, as you said, it's just he's improving and developing those aspects of his game.
But back in October, over a 365-day span, Kotkaniemi Niemi had more goals than Nick Suzuki. Just throwing it out there. I seen this tweet. So just
Talk
throwing
about
that out
cherry
here.
picking
One of
stats.
them is going to be
Oh,
bought out, the other one's not. So let's just, yeah, we'll leave it at that.
boy.
But we talked about the secondary scoring, and I think the bigger impact it's going to have once we finally get it in Montreal is that we see Caulfield and Suzuki producing and Slafkovský as well. And when they're the only line on the team that can score, when you have a second line that can score, you break up that defensive coverage a little bit and it opens things up. So you're going to have more points for that top line once you finally get a second line.
Well, and part of it too, let's then again, where would we be now if Kirby Dach hadn't suffered that knee injury? I think it would be a completely different story. I still think, and I think Slafkovský would still be playing well. He'd still be developing along because, again, we can't forget Dach and Slafkovský in preseason, you saw it. And in that first game, had terrific chemistry together. And in fact, what was I was reading, they did a piece in the Gazette a couple of weeks ago about what Kirby Dach's been doing, while he's been recovering, how he's monitoring the games. And he said, yeah, he and Slafkovský are still like tight. They're talking a lot. And they said they're really looking forward to next season, to playing together next season, even though Slafkovský is playing great on the first line. It's not like Slaf is sitting there going, no, keep me with these guys. He's like, no, I'm really looking forward to playing with you next season. So if that chemistry continues, Doc's healthy and that chemistry continues, well, then it's just a matter of, okay, who's playing up on the top line and who's going to be skating on their left or right wing on the Doc's Slafkovský line. So,
And that's why I think this draft's important for forward, because really what you're missing, if Doc's healthy and Newhook's healthy, you have your second line.
There's
You
your
have
second line.
Slaf, Doc, and Newhook. If that clicked at the first game, they kept clicking. That second line was there all season. And then you're just looking for that winger for
For the
Cole
top line.
Caulfield and Suzuki. So this is why I think this draft for a forward or a trade for a key forward. I know Zegras name's going around, going to Montreal. I don't know if that's going to
Yeah,
happen or not.
That one, yeah, can we just touch on that very, very, very quickly on that
Give
one?
her.
I mean, okay, I get the excitement about Trevor Zegras. I do. And I like the kid. I really do. He's got a great self-deprecating sense of humor, but my concern is, how is this guy going to hand if you trade for him? First of all, it's going to cost you a lot. Pat Verbeek's one of the toughest negotiators in the league, right? When it comes to swinging trades. So right away, say goodbye to Montreal's first round pick in this year's draft. Not Winnipeg's, Montreal's. That's gone. Say goodbye to one of your top prospects. Who are you willing to part with? You willing to give up Lane Hutson? Are you willing to give up David Reinbacher? Is Owen Beck a guy you're comfortable with parting with? Who do you want to give up as a top prospect? Think carefully. Because this is the type of guy you're not getting him for Winnipeg's first round pick. And maybe we'll give you Wah or we'll give you this. No, it's going to cost you your first and a top prospect for sure. Okay. And maybe a young roster player to boot. It's not going to be cheap. But if you are able to get Trevor Zegras, my concern is for what you're going to be giving up for him, is this guy mentally prepared to play in Montreal? He's been playing sheltered in Anaheim. Okay, he's playing for a team that's stuck in the bottom of the league that nobody's paid any attention to since Ryan Getzlaf retired and Corey Perry got traded. Okay, they're not paying any attention to these guys. All right, so it's been quiet there. He hasn't faced the pressure he will face coming here, because in Montreal, he's going to be expected just like Jonathan Drouin before him, just like you look at every player. Go all the way back to Pierre LaRouche. I'm so old. To Pierre LaRouche in the late 70s for Peter Mihalovic. And we thought, oh, yeah, this is great. It turned out thankfully we didn't need Pierre LaRouche. There's a reason why he sat in the playoffs, right? But that was the thing. A guy who was a 50-goal scorer in Pittsburgh on a bad team comes to Montreal, and the pressure is just too much, okay? And Jonathan Drouin, bless him. You know, he did his best. And when we found out all the things he was having to deal with, you know, and needing to take time for his mental health, like, my heart just went out to him, but it was just not the right environment for him. He was expected to come in and be the guy, and he wasn't the guy. And now you've got Trevor Zegras, who is incredibly talented. Yes, he is. Eric Engels says, oh, he's got more talent in his little finger than anybody on the Canadiens right now. Gee, I think Nick Suzuki would be a little pissed to hear that, but whatever. Fine. You go with that, Eric. I like Eric. Don't get me wrong.
Eric did.
I just thought that was a little hyperbole on his part.
He did explain himself later that's quite what he meant. But
yeah, but that was out there. Sorry. Yeah. Your first reaction was the true one, Eric. Sorry. Yeah. Sorry, bud. Because he knew afterwards, oh, shit, I shouldn't have said that. I'm going to get blowback here. But, yes.
Eric wants to come on the show and fight you, he's welcome.
But honest to God, I mean, yes, his talent is undeniable. But can he handle the pressure of playing in Montreal? All that pressure. 20 microphones in your hand, 20 cameras in your face, you know. If you have a bad game, it's going to be, you know, you're going to have to deal with that when you go for a coffee. For crying out loud. So if he's mentally prepared for it and he can handle that, okay, sure. But you better make damn sure that he is if you're going to go after him. Because if not, you will have given up at least two high-quality assets, more likely three, to bring in a guy who is not going to be the guy. All right? Where it's going to be, oh, geez, you know, he's lucky he's playing with Suzuki and Caulfield because they're dragging his sorry ass along. I can hear it, okay? So, yeah. Do I think they're going to get Zegras? Honestly, no.
I don't think they are either.
I don't think that's going to happen.
Well, I think that's a great way to end the rumor show as we lead into
deadline. I just want to say, according to Twitter, it's going to take the Calgary pick, Armia, and Harris to get Zegras. So I don't know where you're getting your information from, but from what I'm told, we might throw Yolonen in there too.
Just a little head in there. Yeah, there's a sweetener for you. There's a sweetener for you, Pat, buddy. There you go. They didn't call him a little ball of hate for nothing.
So we'll end the show here. Lyle, it's always great to have you back on the show. You're always welcome. Hell, you can be one of the hosts all summer long if you'd like.
What's it pay? Come on. I need Benjamins.
We pay taxes into your pension. How about that?
There it is. Yes. You're keeping me fat and happy with my pension. Yeah.
Yeah.
If I'm fat and happy, why did I lose 20 pounds since last summer? Tell me. Anyway.
Right?
Listen, guys, anytime you want to have me on, it's always a pleasure. I mean, you know, yes, I have to be unbiased when I'm talking on other shows and things like that, but I am a Habs fan, so it's nice to be able to let the Habs colors fly. You know, hey, come on.
So for everyone listening, thank you for tuning in. Lyle, thank you for being on the show. Treg, my God, it's great to have you. And if you're talking about it, so are we.
The Podcast Super Friends is a monthly meeting of five podcast producers.
Hi, I'm Catherine O'Brien from Branch Out Programs in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. I'm John Gay from Jagged Detroit Podcasts.
I'm Matt Kundle from the Sound Off Podcast Network.
I'm David Yes from Pod 617, the Boston Podcast Network.
And I'm Johnny Peterson from Straight Up Podcasts.
Together, they form the Podcast Super Friends, an alliance of podcast masterminds sharing best practices, insights, and discussions to help make you a better podcaster. Follow or subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, or at soundoff.network.
I'm Matt Kundle, host of the Sound Off Podcast, the show about podcast and broadcast. Since 2016, we've been speaking with amazing people who have populated your ears for decades. Legendary broadcasters, research wizards, talent experts, podcasters, voice talent. Almost 400 stories, all for free. Subscribe or follow the Sound Off Podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, or at soundoffpodcast.com.